Hello, and thank you for listening to Call the Roll. Call the Roll is a public affairs program produced by the Columbus City Council and aired here on Freedom FM. I'm your host, John Ivana, Communications Director for the Columbus City Council. Thanks for listening. On this week's show, a chance for residents and business owners to shape capital spending in Columbus for years to come, plus a couple of best-of segments, one touching on changes to the loitering law and the soon-to-arrive recycling program for the city of Columbus. Joining us now is Councilmember Tyson, chair of the Finance Committee, and to briefly explain the difference between the capital improvement budget and the budget we just passed. Didn't we just pass a budget like 2 weeks ago?
Yes, we did. Last week or so, we passed the general fund budget. And that's the budget that's really the it's the operating budget. It's the budget that pays most of it is for the salaries of employees. About 70% of that pays for the salaries of our employees. It also pays for, the utilities and the services that we offer to our residents.
So what is the capital budget?
The capital budget happens to be our infrastructure, things that are like the buildings, the maintenance on our buildings, curbs, sidewalks, helping to pay for our the sewer system, things of that nature. So it would be like if you don't have your own home, it would be paying for your roof on your home. If you have any repairs to your home of that structure, we'd pay for that. If you have a leaky basement, it would be paying for things like that.
And because some of those costs can really become astronomical, given the fact there are so many different assets that the city is in charge of, there's the capital improvement budget, which council members will help pass during the month of March. But then there's also the capital improvement plan. What is the CIP, the plan part, and how does that help really plan for the future?
Yes, the CIP, the Capital Improvement Plan, is a plan that we look at. It's 5 years out as to what kinds of infrastructure needs we'll have in the future. And we also structure the plan so that if we know, for example, today that we want to add sidewalks in a community, but we don't have the dollars for it this year, we may put it in the plan for 2014. So we know that we're going to get to that place, but it's 2014. A recreation center may need, which I've been a proponent of, air conditioning. Well, maybe we can't do them all right now, but we will figure out which year will be the best year to be able to, we can have the dollars to pay for the air conditioning within that facility in, 2015. And so this was an opportunity in a CIP hearing that we're going to have for residents to come down and share with us the needs that they have in their community. If they feel they need a sidewalk in their community or a street needs to be resurfaced or a rec center that needs to have something done to it, some improvement made to it, this would be an opportunity for communities to come down, community residents to come down and share with us, as well as if in the business district, there may be something that needs to happen in a business district that residents and business owners can come down and share with us what capital needs that their community is in need of.
February 16th, that's a Thursday night, beginning at 5 o'clock in City Council Chambers. The meeting will also be broadcast live on CTV, Columbus's government channel 3 and local cable systems. This really is a chance for the residents to have some input, to be at the table. And they can be at the table if they so choose or not. And some of the things that they're asking for or suggesting in the capital improvement plan may already be in the plan. And that's where I think the administration is going to be able to help us go through some things as far as that is definitely something that's on the radar, or note, that's a really good idea, and maybe we do need to move that up, because there could be a sense of urgency also coming from a significant group in the community or a neighborhood.
That's absolutely correct, John. I think it's so important. This gives the community residents an opportunity to come in and share their needs with us, and it certainly could, if we don't know of a need that's out there, so this is so important, because sometimes we don't know all the needs, and if there's a particular need in a community, this is a community's opportunity to come down to council and to come to this hearing and to share with us what those needs are. And then we can identify that needs. Once it's been identified, determine when and how we could begin to meet that need. And so this is a great opportunity for residents to get involved in our infrastructure needs.
I've always been always kind of amazed by the numbers that are thrown around. Capital Improvement Plan can right now in the city of Columbus with 780,000 people is more than $800 million in this plan right there. A lot of that goes for infrastructure we don't see, but equally as important needs of service and utilities, underground sanitary sewer systems and stuff like that.
That's correct. And even the upgrade of our buildings, as I mentioned, we have a number of facilities throughout our community that our residents, you know, utilize. One of those in particular, like I mentioned, is recreation and parks. And those facilities need improvements. I mean, last year in the capital plan, we put new roofs on many of our facilities. We put handicap ramps in. There were a number of things that we did. And so those are the kinds of things that you will see. And then, again, as you just mentioned, there are a number of projects that are person would not see, or even if they wouldn't even see it in terms of the sewage system and things of that nature, but even our buildings that you wouldn't even notice those. But those are it is an investment in our infrastructure so that later on down the road we do not have to spend, you know, more dollars to be able to repair our facilities.
Yes. And a lot of what we're able to do because residents are going back to work because of the uptick in the economy, and we set aside dollars for capital projects and help retire bonds. A 0.25% of every dollar it's brought in goes to helping us pay for these projects that will impact Columbus and our neighborhoods for decades to come.
That's absolutely correct, and it is so important that we do that, John. Just when I sit in on the bond calls, that a question that comes up periodically is, you know, about our infrastructure needs, and they know that we put 25 cents of every dollar back to be able to take care of those infrastructure needs, because certainly the individuals that are responsible for rating our city financially, they want to make sure that we're doing the very best job in making sure that our infrastructure is in a great place. And so I'm excited to say that we put 25 cents back of every dollar, and that we are certainly take the capital budget. I mean, the capital budget is very, very important for the city to continue to grow and to prosper.
So Thursday, February 16th, 5 o'clock, Columbus City Council in the chambers. Who would you like to show up? Who do you want to hear from that day?
I want to hear from neighborhood leaders. I also want to hear from the community residents. I want to hear from the business community. So anyone who wants to come and share what infrastructure needs they have in their community are welcome to come. And I would be very, very excited to see as many people as possible come down and share that with us.
Councilmember Priscilla R. Tyson, Chair of the Finance Committee, here on Call the Roll. These next two segments were first broadcast in mid-December of 2011. Setting the record straight on loitering. The City Council held a public hearing to discuss the possibility of bolstering the loitering law. Some in the community have called on city leaders to enforce a law that could be found unconstitutional and a violation of civil rights, thus opening the city to liability and hefty payments following litigation. Here's Public Safety and Judiciary Committee Chair Michelle M. Mills.
The concern of loitering has been raised from our community, from several members, several groups and concerns, and many of those comments and concerns were raised during a hearing related to trespassing, and since then related to some of the challenges that not only residents but also business owners face as a result of loitering. But again, we will delve into that a little bit later. But because so many individuals and groups raised a question, it is certainly our responsibility to explore the issue and to determine if, in fact, there is any action or changes that, as a legislative body of the city, we should be making to protect our citizens and continue to increase public safety. Again, taking this opportunity to learn about the issue and having some of the concerns that not only our city attorney but the Division of Police raises when it comes to enforcing loitering in aid of drug offense. And just like with many other issues, we have to take a look at not only the lawfulness but also what the resources require when it comes to enforcing certain things, and be very diligent and responsible when it comes to city resources as we attempt to be stewards. And as many of you have been aware and engaged in, we're currently in a process of listening to the community related to the budget, and that is a direct impact when we make changes that impact the resources of the city, our great safety officers, and how that impact will be felt by us not only financially but also from our ability to meet other greater needs and concerns in our city as it relates to safety.
That was Councilmember Mills. Now here's City Attorney Richard C. Pfeiffer, Jr.
We know that in Columbus, Ohio, drugs are being trafficked on the street, on the public sidewalk. Here's what you can see on the streets, on street corners. You can see people repeatedly beckoning, stopping, attempting to stop, or engaging passerbys or pedestrians in conversation. Repeatedly stopping or attempting to stop motor vehicles. Repeatedly interfering with the free passage of other persons on the sidewalk. Directing pedestrians or motorists through words, hailing, waving of arms, pointing, signaling, or other bodily gestures to a person or premises where it appears a transaction occurs. Transferring small objects or package in a furtive or surreptitious fashion in exchange for currency or something else of value. Acting as a lookout by communicating to another person close by that a police officer is in the vicinity. Now, if you live in a neighborhood where you see this going all the time, you know what's going on. Drug trafficking is going on. And if you're out there, you're frustrated. You want something done now to take these people off the street. That's what you want. And you want government to do it. You want the police officer to do it. But let's be clear. If a police officer observes the behavior that's outlined above in this slide, he or she cannot simply arrest these people. More evidence than the officer's observation must be made. Because when you look at some of these things that happen, there could be innocent conduct being done by these folks. So you just can't have the government say, show me your papers, get in the van, we're arresting you. You got to have more than that. Now, Columbus has an ordinance on the books that is referred to as loitering in aid of drug offense. And if that slide could please go up. And please bear with me because a lot of this will require some tedious reading, but it's necessary if you want to focus and get a complete understanding of what we're doing. This is the law we have now in the books. It's section 2317.50 of the Columbus City Code. And it states, no person with purpose to commit or aid the commission of a drug offense shall loiter in any public place. All right, if you take that alone, and you're seeing this action that we showed on the first slide, how do you know? How do you prove in a court of law that the person had a purpose if you can't find evidence, such as drugs on the person or something else? Now, if you go through, please go down to E. Again, if a police officer is going to make an arrest, he or she has to have before him or her a specific guidance as to what to be looking for. There can't be much discretion in, oh, I think they're doing this, I think they're doing that. That's not going to stand up in a court of law. The law's got to be clear in providing guidance to the police officers. But look at E. In determining the purpose of an offender under this section, the court shall consider all relevant surrounding circumstances, which may include but are not limited to the following factors, and then we have several. That language that I just read, which says which may include but are not limited to the following factors, causes this ordinance to have serious constitutional problems. As a result, our office, through our police legal advisor, has advised the Columbus police not to enforce this ordinance. So now you're a citizen. You say, well, Pfeiffer just said don't enforce this law. He's not helping us. Well, let me tell you, we are helping us. We have to follow the law in enforcing the law, and we want to make sure our police officers are properly trained and we have sufficient evidence to get convictions in court. Now, why do we say that this law is unconstitutional? Because in 1993, our Ohio Supreme Court, in looking at a very similar law, found it unconstitutional. That's 1993. So you go on the street and you say, I know they're committing a crime. Police officer, go arrest those folks. Look, they're waving at passerbys. They're directing people over there. Yeah, but you know, that could be sending people to a party. Yeah, but that's not what they're doing. Well, if I'm going to charge them with the crime, I need more evidence than that to get probable cause to charge them, and for sure for a conviction, I'm going to need some more evidence. But let me keep reading. Laws against inchoate crimes like attempt, solicitation, and conspiracy are commonly used in the effort to prevent criminal activity. Their enforceability and constitutionality are, for the most part, well settled. The discretion afforded law enforcement officers, prosecutors, and juries in the enforcement of loitering laws, however, lends itself to abuse. Thus, loitering statutes and ordinances are probably the most controversial laws used to prevent crime. And I can personally attest to that, as I think Councilman Mills has, because in the last few months there's been serious conversation about this, which, to say the least, has caused quite a discussion in the community. Now, if you're going to write a statute that defines what criminal, if you're going to say what behavior is criminal, you've got to do it so, and please go to the vague. It can't be vague. The language must be clear. If you're an ordinary citizen, you ought to be able to read the statute or the ordinance and say, I understand clearly that if I engage in a certain behavior, it's going to be a crime. So it can't be vague. As we say in the law, it can't be void for vagueness, but it's got to be clear. All right, so it's clear. But how broad is the language? Is it so broad that it sweeps within its definition conduct that could be innocent and could be legal? And if it is, you got a problem. So when you go back and you look at the points that we listed in the earlier slide, some of that activity could be constitutionally protected, and that's going to give us problems in trying to write an ordinance. Now, let me talk about some problems other jurisdictions have had in this. Real problems. If you go to the slide, first of all, New York City had been enforcing an ordinance on loitering that it was told by a court not to, so it's been held in contempt and it's going to be fined. And that slide number 6, which is lengthy, will show you all about that. It also goes on to another, that New York story goes on to another. Now, here's the next one out of Maryland. And this is the one that as the city's attorney and trying to make sure we don't end up paying legal fees if we get sued and lose on these kind of cases, you have a case here from Annapolis where Annapolis enacted a similar ordinance, but before it even got enforced, it was the NAACP had standing to take it to court, and by declaratory injunctive action, it was found to be unconstitutional, and by its very existence, it was found to create a chill among people wanting to do certain acts. So those are concerns we have as lawyers when thinking of defending the city against possible action for any ordinance we write. Now, let's get to what we propose. This proposal that we put up on the screen is what we, and I say our people, myself, Laura Baker, Melanie Tobias, Jeff Furby, believe is constitutional. We believe it's constitutional. We also believe that its application, it will be applied in very narrow circumstances, and it won't be automatically used to sweep those people off the street that you see doing those actions that they're doing. So let me go through this. And again, you can see, once again, we talk about no person while in or about a public place shall do any of the following with purpose to commit or aid the commission of a drug offense. And that therein is where we have to have evidence. How do you prove what a person's purpose is if you can't find drugs on them or you can't find a gun on them? Well, we list all these items. And then we go down and talk about what a public place is. But let's go down to D. No arrest shall be made for a violation of this section until the arresting officer first requests and affords such person an opportunity to explain such conduct. No person shall be convicted if it appears that the explanation rendered is true and the surrounding circumstances disclosed a lawful purpose. So the police officer can observe what he sees or she sees, but the officer has to go another step.
That was City Attorney Pfeiffer. During the hearing, city council members were urged to respect the rights of residents. Gary Daniels is from the Ohio ACLU.
We're all here because we're concerned about the city of Columbus. I'm a resident of the city of Columbus. Most of us, or all of us, are residents of the city of Columbus. We don't want any further crime. We don't want any further crime victims. I've been a victim of crime more than once since I've lived here in the city for about 4 years now. And it's clear we're all on the same page with regard to this particular issue. But sharing everybody's frustration, I'm also here to say that anti-loitering laws are not the answer. It pains me in a certain respect, and I'm sure it pains City Attorney for him to be agreeing with the ACLU and me to be agreeing with the City Attorney, because that's not a position we normally find ourselves in, but I found very little to disagree with in City Attorney Pfeiffer's presentation. I think he was absolutely right when he talks about how these laws prohibit activity that is otherwise lawful when other people do it. I have certainly leaned into cars for lawful activity. I have tried to avoid the police on different different occasions, even though I haven't been doing anything unlawful. I have engaged in activities that under this ordinance and maybe even under what would be the new improved ordinance might be considered illegal. Cities everywhere have tried to craft constitutional ordinances, and they have almost without exception failed. These ordinances have been struck down by the U.S. Supreme Court on more than one occasion. They have been struck down by the Ohio Supreme Court, and they have been struck down by lower federal and state courts. If you are looking for an answer to the problems of crime in the city of Columbus, anti-loitering laws are not the answer. Across the country, you might have anti-loitering laws on the books, but that doesn't mean they're being enforced, as City Attorney Pfeiffer pointed out. They might be on the books, they might be getting enforced, and they just simply might not have been challenged up to this point. Every time you're looking at these particular instances and facts and what's going on in particular cities, you have to know that the answer is always it depends. We don't know what's going on, we don't know the facts behind what's going on in any particular situation, but I can say again, almost without exception, these laws get struck down across the country and across Ohio. Furthermore, if somebody is to be convicted under this law, it's only a fourth degree misdemeanor, which means that even if you were to go around and start enforcing this law heavily, people are getting a slap on the wrist. They're not going to end up in jail. They will not end up in prison. So I hope that City Council takes the views of people who are concerned about this very seriously. It appears that you are, and I encourage those who are very concerned about this to exercise their First Amendment rights. It is the squeaky wheel that gets the grease, and I encourage them to hold our city officials accountable and do what they can do to stop crime in the city of Columbus.
Get ready to go green, Columbus. City Council members have unanimously approved a package of legislation that will allow the city to institute a curbside recycling program for nearly 230,000 Columbus households. The program will collect waste, diverting trash from the landfill, and save the city money in tipping fees. With more is Public Service Director Mark Kelsey.
President Ginther, Chair Paley, and other members of council, to meet deadlines for the residential recycling program, we ask that you support these pieces of legislation tonight so that we may begin the program's implementation phase this month. As we have previously shared with you, the program will be phased in over five phases, covering about 1 year, with cart distribution beginning in the spring of 2012. During those five phases, blue 64-gallon recycling carts will be delivered to 227,000 households across the city. We will start with households that currently have their yard waste picked up on Mondays, which includes the southwest, far west, and northwest parts of the city. The second phase will include households that have their yard waste picked up on Tuesdays, including households on the south, southeast, east, and far east sides. And the three subsequent phases will continue through the city based upon the day of the week residents have their yard waste picked up. In each of the five phases, the carts will be delivered 4 to 5 weeks before the recycling collection service begins. Each cart will include written educational materials that will explain what materials should and should not be placed in the carts. During the time that we are implementing the program, we will keep City Council apprised of the program's progress. In fact, we will provide City Council annual reports by February 15th of each year. These annual reports will reflect on the program's progress in the prior year. In particular, the mayor is committed to a regional approach to recycling, and our reports will document progress with our regional partners to reach that goal. Other items to be included in the annual report are the following: diversion rates and percentages and tonnage, savings and tipping fees as a result of the program, overall program expenditures, and keeping council informed of new technologies that may improve diversion rates and or significantly reduce program costs. Again, the mayor and I thank you, and I will gladly answer any questions that you may have.
Are there any other comments or questions by City Council members? Councilmember Craig. Let me first of all thank you, Chair Paley, for your leadership in this area. I wanted to certainly also thank Director Kelsey and Environmental Steward Aaron Miller for their work in engaging the community to help determine the schedule and can size needed to make this program as responsive as possible. Over the last 2 years, working with Ms. Miller, I've been able to speak with constituents and stakeholders that have expressed how vitally important a curbside recycling program is to our city's transformation into an environmental leader. What is important tonight, and I'm pleased to hear it, I know that President Ginther and our colleagues on council is certainly interested in promoting the idea of realization regarding this matter. But how critically this is needed to enter into citywide recycling for residential customers, not just for this generation to begin to make waste management more sustainable, but also to teach our younger generations to make recycling a part of their daily lives. And again, thank you for your leadership. And again, it is a compelling issue, and our expectation certainly is to follow this this process on a continual reports as to how we're doing in terms of its effectiveness and viability.
And we expect more news on the curbside recycling program to be released early next month. And when they do, we'll make sure you have all the details. We are out of time for this edition of Call the Roll. If you have a question or a comment, please email us at calltheroll@columbus.gov. That's CALLTHEROLL @columbus.gov. And don't forget, you can follow the Columbus City Council on our Facebook and our Twitter pages. On behalf of the entire Columbus City Council, I'm your host, John Ivanek. Thanks for listening to Freedom FM, and have a great weekend.